Chapter 30. How there can be absolute necessity in created things. Now though all things depend on God's will as their first cause, which is not necessitated in operating except by the supposition of his purpose, nevertheless absolute necessity is not therefore excluded from things, so that we be obliged to assert that all things are contingent, which some one might think to be the case, for the reason that they have arisen from their cause, not of absolute necessity, since in things a contingent effect is wont to be one that does not necessarily result from a cause, because there are some created things which it is simply and absolutely necessary must be, for it is simply and absolutely necessary that those things be in which there is no possibility of not being. Now some things are so brought by God into being, that there is in their nature a potentiality to non-being. This happens through their matter being in potentiality to another form. Wherefore those things, wherein either there is no matter, or, if there is, it has not the possibility of receiving another form, have not a potentiality to non-being. Hence it is simply and absolutely necessary for them to be. If, however, it be said that things which are from nothing, so far as they are concerned, tend to nothing, and that in consequence there is in all creatures a potentiality to non-being, it is clear that this does not follow. For created things are said to tend to nothing in the same sense as they are from nothing, and this is not otherwise than according to the power of the agent. Wherefore in created things there is not a potentiality to non-being, but there is in the Creator the power to give them being or to cease pouring forth being into them, since he works in producing things, not by a necessity of his nature, but by his will, as we have proved. Again, since created things come into being through the divine will, it follows that they are such as God willed them to be. Now the fact that God is said to have brought things into being by his will, and not of necessity, does not exclude his having willed certain things to be which are of necessity, and others which are contingently, so that there may be an ordinate diversity in things. Nothing, therefore, prevents certain things produced by the divine will being necessary. Further, it belongs to God's perfection that he bestowed his likeness on created things, except as regards those things with which created being is incompatible, since it belongs to a perfect agent to produce its like as far as possible. Now to be simply necessary is not incompatible with the notion of created being, for nothing prevents a thing being necessary which nevertheless has a cause of its necessity. For instance, the conclusions of demonstrations. Therefore nothing prevents a certain thing being so produced by God, that nevertheless it is simply necessary for it to be in fact. This is a proof of the divine perfection. Moreover, the further distant a thing is from that which is being of itself, namely God, the nearer is it to non-being. Wherefore the nearer a thing is to God, the further is it removed from non-being. Now things that already are near to non-being through having a potentiality to non-being. Consequently, those things which are nearest to God, and for that reason most remote from non-being, must be such that there is no potentiality to non-being in them, so that the order in things be complete and the like are necessary absolutely. Therefore some created things have been necessarily. Accordingly it must be observed that if the universe of created beings be considered as coming from their first principle, we find that they depend on the will, not on a necessity of their principle, except on a necessity of supposition, as already stated. If, however, they be considered in relation to their proximate principles, they are found to have absolute necessity. For nothing prevents certain principles being produced, not of necessity, and yet, these being supposed, such and such an effect follows of necessity. Thus the death of this animal has absolute necessity from the very fact that it is composed of contraries, although it was not absolutely necessary for it to be composed of contraries. In like manner that such and such natures were produced by God, was voluntary, and yet, once they are so constituted, something results or happens that has absolute necessity. In created things, however, necessity is to be taken in various ways in relation to various causes. For since a thing cannot be without its essential principles, which are matter and form, that which belongs to a thing by reason of its essential principles must needs have absolute necessity in all things. Now from these principles, insofar as they are principles of being, the threefold absolute necessity is found in things. First in relation to the being of the thing of which they are the principles. And since matter, as regards what it is being in potentiality, and since what can be, can also not be, in relation to their matter certain things are necessarily corruptible, for instance, an animal, through being composed of contraries, and fire, through its matter being susceptible of contraries. But form, as regards what it is act, and by it things exist actually. Wherefore from it there results necessity in some things. This happens either because those things are forms without matter, and thus there is no potentiality to non-being in them, but by their forms they are always in the act of being, as in the case of separate substances, or because their forms are so perfect as to equal the whole potentiality of their matter, wherefore there remains no potentiality to another form, nor, in consequence, to non-being, as in the case of heavenly bodies. But in those things wherein the form does not fulfill the whole potentiality of matter, there still remains a potentiality to another form. Wherefore in them there is not necessity of being, but the act of being is, in them, the result of form overcoming matter, as in the case of the elements and things composed of them. Because the form of an element does not reach matter in its whole potentiality, for matter does not receive the form of one element, except by being subjected to the one of two contraries, while the form of a mixed body reaches matter as disposed by a determinate mode of mixture. Now there must be one same subject of contraries, and of all intermediaries resulting from the mixture of the extremes. Wherefore it is evident that all things which either have contraries, or are composed of contraries, are corruptible, and things which are not so, are everlasting unless they be corrupted accidentally, as forms which are not subsistent, and have been through being in matter. In another way there is absolute necessity in things from their essential principles, by relation to the parts of their matter or form, if it happens that in certain things these principles are not simple. For since the proper matter of man is a mixed body, with a certain temperament and endowed with organs, it is absolutely necessary that a man should have in himself each of the elements, humors, and principal organs. Likewise if man is a rational mortal animal, and this is the nature or form of a man, it is necessary for him to be both animal and rational. Thirdly, there is absolute necessity in things through the relations of their essential principles to the properties consequent upon their matter or form. Thus it is necessary that a saw be hard, since it is a viand, and that a man be capable of learning. But necessity of the agent may regard either the action itself, or the consequent effect. The former kind of necessity is like the necessity of an accident which it owes to the essential principles. For just as other accidents result from the necessity of essential principles, so does action from the necessity of the form whereby the agent actually is, since it acts so far as it is actual. Yet this happens differently in the action which remains in the agent, such as to understand and to will, and in the action which passes into something else, such as to heat. For in the former kind of action, the form by which the agent becomes actual causes necessity in the action itself, since for its being nothing extrinsic is required as term of the action. Because when the sense is made actual by the sensible species, it is necessary for it to perceive, and in like manner, when the intellect is made actual by the intelligible species. But in the second kind of action, necessity of action results from the form. As regards the power to act, for if fire is hot, it is necessary that it have the power to heat, although it is not necessary that it heat, since it may be hindered by something extrinsic. Nor does it affect the point at issue, whether by its form one agent be sufficient alone for the action, or whether it be necessary to have an assemblage of many agents in order to do the one action. For instance, many men to row a boat, since all are as one agent, who is made actual by their being united together in one action. The necessity which results from an efficient or moving cause in the effect or thing moved, depends not only on the agent, but also on a condition of the thing moved and of the recipient of the agent's action, which recipient either is nowise in potentiality to receive the effect of such an action, as wool to be made into a saw, or else its potentiality is hindered by contrary agents, or by contrary dispositions inherent to the movable, or by contrary forms, offering an obstacle that is stronger than the power of the agent in acting. Thus iron is not melted by a feeble heat. Hence, in order that the effect follow, it is necessary that there be in the patient potentiality to receive, and in the agent conquest of the patient, so that it be able to transform it to a contrary disposition. And if the effect, resulting in the patient through its conquest by the agent, be contrary to the natural disposition of the patient, there will be necessity of violence, as when a stone is thrown upwards. But if it be not contrary to the natural disposition of the subject, there will be necessity not of violence, but of the natural order, as in the movement of the heavens, which results from an extrinsic active principle, and nevertheless is not contrary to the natural disposition of the movable subject, wherefore it is not a violent but a natural movement. It is the same in the alteration of lower bodies by the heavenly bodies, for there is a natural inclination in the lower bodies to receive the influence of the higher bodies. It is also thus in the generation of the elements, since the form to be introduced by generation is not contrary to primary matter, which is the subject of generation, although it is contrary to the form to be cast aside, because matter under a contrary form is not the subject of generation. Accordingly, it is clear from what we have said that the necessity resulting from an efficient cause depends, in some things, on the disposition of the agent alone, but in others on the disposition of both agent and patient. If then this disposition, by reason of which the effect follows of necessity, be absolutely necessary in both agent and patient, there will be absolute necessity in the efficient cause as in those things which act necessarily and always. On the other hand, if it be not absolutely necessary but may be removed, no necessity will result from the efficient cause except on the supposition that both have the disposition required for action as, for instance, in those things which are sometimes hindered in their operation, either through defective power, or through the violence of a contrary, wherefore they do not act always and necessarily, but in the majority of cases. From a final cause there results necessity in things in two ways. In one way, forasmuch as it is first in the intention of the agent. In this respect necessity results from the end in the same way as from the agent, since the agent acts in so far as it intends the end, both in natural and in voluntary actions. For in natural things, the intention of the end belongs to the agent according to the latter's form, whereby the end is becoming to it, wherefore the natural thing must needs tend to the end according to the virtue of its form. Thus a heavy body tends towards the center according to the measure of its gravity, and in voluntary matters, the will inclines to act for the sake of an end, forasmuch as it intends that end, although it is not always inclined to do this or that, which are on account of the end, as much as it desires the end, when the end can be obtained not by this or that alone, but in several ways. In another way necessity results from the end according as this is posterior in being. This is not absolute but conditional necessity. Thus we say that it will be necessary for a saw to be made of iron, if it is to do the work of a saw. Chapter 31. That it is not necessary for creatures to have been always. It remains for us to prove from the foregoing that it is not necessary for created things to have been from eternity. Because if it be necessary for the universe of creatures, or any particular creature whatsoever, to be, it must have this necessity either of itself or from another. But it cannot have it of itself, for it was proved above, that every being must be from the first being. Now that which has being, not from itself, cannot possibly have necessity of being from itself, since what must necessarily be, cannot possibly not be, and consequently that which of itself has necessary being, has of itself the impossibility of not being, and therefore it follows that it is not a non-being, wherefore it is a being. If, however, this necessity of a creature is from something else, it must be from a cause that is extrinsic, because whatever we may take that is within the creature, as being from another. Now an extrinsic cause is either efficient or final. From the efficient cause, however, it follows that the effect is necessarily, when it is necessary for the agent to act, for it is through the agent's action that the effect depends on the efficient cause. Accordingly, if it is not necessary for the agent to act in order that the effect be produced, neither is it absolutely necessary for the effect to be. Now God does not act of necessity in producing creatures, as we have proved above. Wherefore it is not absolutely necessary for the creature to be, as regards necessity dependent on the efficient cause. Likewise neither is it necessary as regards the necessity that depends on the final cause. For things directed to an end do not derive necessity from the end, except in so far as without them the end either cannot be, as preservation of life without food, or cannot be so well, as a journey without a horse. Now the end of God's will, from which things came into being, can be nothing else but His goodness, as we proved in the first book. And this does not depend on creatures, neither as to its being, since it is per se necessary being, nor as to well-being, since it is by itself good simply, all of which were proved above. Therefore it is not absolutely necessary for the creature to be, and consequently neither is it necessary to suppose that the creature has been always. Again, that which proceeds from a will is not absolutely necessary, except perhaps when it is necessary for the will to will it. Now God, as proved above, brought things into being, not by a necessity of His nature, but by His will, nor does He necessarily will creatures to be, as we proved in the first book. Therefore it is not absolutely necessary for the creature to be, and therefore neither is it necessary that it should have been always. Moreover, it has been proved above, that God does not act by an action that is outside Him, as though it went out from Him and terminated in a creature, like heating which goes out from fire and terminates inward, but His will is His action, and things are in the way in which God wills them to be. Now it is not necessary that God will the creature always to have been, since neither is it necessary that God will a thing to be at all, as we proved in the first book. It is not necessary that creatures should have been always. Again, a thing does not proceed necessarily from a voluntary agent except by reason of something due. But God does not produce the creature by reason of any debt, if we consider the production of all creatures absolutely, as we have shown above. Therefore God does not necessarily produce the creature. Neither therefore is it necessary, because God is eternal, that He should have produced the creature from eternity. Further, it has been proved, that absolute necessity in created things results, not from a relation to a principle that is of itself necessary to be, namely God, but from a relation to other causes which are not of themselves necessary to be. Now the necessity resulting from a relation which is not of itself necessary to be, does not necessitate that something should have been always, for if something runs it follows that it is in motion, but it is not necessary for it to have been always in motion, because the running itself is not necessary. Therefore nothing necessitates that creatures should always have been. Chapter 32. Arguments of those who wish to prove the eternity of the world from God's side of the question. Since, however, many have held that the world has been always and of necessity, and have endeavored to prove this, it remains for us to give their arguments, so as to show that they do not necessarily prove the eternity of the world. In the first place we shall set forth the arguments that are taken from God's side, secondly, those which are taken from the side of creatures, thirdly, those which are taken from the manner of their making, on account of which they are said to begin to be anew. On the part of God the following arguments are produced in order to prove the eternity of the world. Every agent that acts not always, is moved either per se or accidentally per se, as fire which was not always burning, begins to burn, either because it is newly lit, or because it is newly transferred so as to be near the fuel accidentally, as the mover of an animal begins anew to move the animal with some movement made in its regard, either from within, as an animal begins to be moved when it awakes after its digestion is complete, or from without, as when there newly arise actions that lead to the beginning of a new action. Now God is not moved, neither per se nor accidentally, as we proved in the first book. Therefore God always acts in the same way. But created things are established in being by His action. Therefore creatures always have been. Again, the effect proceeds from the active cause by the latter's action. But God's action is eternal, else He would become an actual agent from being an agent in potentiality, and it would be necessary for Him to be reduced to actuality by some previous agent, which is impossible. Therefore the things created by God have been from eternity. Moreover, given a sufficient cause, its effect must necessarily be granted. For if, given the cause, it were still unnecessary to grant its effect, it would be therefore possible that, given the cause, the effect would be or not be. Therefore the sequence of the effect to its cause would only be possible, and what is possible requires something to reduce it to actuality. Hence it will be necessary to suppose some cause whereby it comes about that the effect is made actual, and thus the first cause was not sufficient. But God is the sufficient cause of creatures being produced, else He would not be a cause, Rather would he be in potentiality to a cause, since he would become a cause by the addition of something which is impossible. Therefore it would seem necessary, since God is from eternity, that the creature was also from eternity. Again, a voluntary agent does not delay to carry out his purpose of making a thing, except on account of something expected and not yet present, and this latter is either sometimes in the agent himself, as where one awaits perfect capability to do something, or the removal of an obstacle to one's capability, and sometimes it is outside the agent, as when one awaits the presence of a person in whose presence the action is to be done, or at least when one awaits the presence of a suitable time which has not yet arrived. For if the will be complete, the power follows suit at once, unless there be a fault therein. Thus at the command of the will the movement of a limb follows at once, unless there be a fault in the motive power which carries out the movement. Hence it is clear that, when one wills to do a thing and it is not done at once, it must be either that this is owing to a fault in the power, of which fault one awaits the removal, or else the will to do it is not complete. And by the will being complete I mean that it wills to do this thing absolutely and from every point of view, whereas the will is incomplete when one does not will absolutely to do this thing, but on a certain condition that does not yet obtain, or when one does not will it except a present obstacle be removed. Now it is evident that whatever God now wills to be, He has willed from eternity to be, for a new movement of the will cannot accrue to Him. Neither could any fault or obstacle affect His power, nor could anything else be awaited for the universal production of creatures, since nothing besides Him is uncreated, as we have proved above. Therefore it is seemingly evident that He produced the creature from eternity. Further, an intellectual agent does not choose one thing rather than another except on account of the one preponderating over the other. But where there is no difference there can be no preponderance. Hence where there is no difference, there is no choice of the one rather than of the other. And for this reason there will be no action of an agent equally indifferent to both of two alternatives, as neither is there of matter. For such a potentiality is like the potentiality of matter. Now, there can be no difference between non-being and non-being. Therefore one non-being is not more eligible than another non-being. But besides the whole universe of creatures there is nothing but the eternity of God. And in nothingness it is impossible to assign any difference of moments, so that it be more fitting to make a certain thing in one moment than in another, nor, again, in eternity, the whole of which is uniform and simple, as we proved in the first book. It follows, therefore, that God's will is indifferent to produce creatures through the whole of eternity. Consequently His will is either that the creature should never be produced in His eternity, or that it should always have been produced. But it is clear that His will is not that the creature should never be made in His eternity, since it is evident that creatures were formed by His will. Therefore it remains that necessarily, as it seems, the creature has been always. Again, things directed to an end take their necessity from the end, especially in those that are done voluntarily. Hence it follows, that as long as there is no change in the end, things directed to the end suffer no change or are produced invariably, unless there arise some new relation between them and the end. Now the end of creatures, that proceed from the divine will, is the divine goodness, which alone can be the end of the divine will. Wherefore since the divine goodness is unchangeable both in itself and in relation to the divine will throughout all eternity, it would seem that creatures are brought into being by the divine will in the same way through the whole of eternity. For it cannot be said that any new relation to the end accrued to them, if it be supposed that they were utterly non-existent before a particular time from which they are supposed to have begun their existence. Further, since the divine goodness is most perfect, when we say that all things came from God on account of His goodness, the sense is not that anything accrued to Him from creatures, but that it belongs to goodness to communicate itself to others as far as possible, and it is by doing so that goodness makes itself known. Now since all things partake of God's goodness in so far as they have being, the more lasting they are the more they participate the goodness of God. Wherefore the everlasting being of a species is called a divine being. But the divine goodness is infinite. Consequently it belongs thereto to communicate itself in an infinite manner, and not only at a particular time. Therefore it would seem to belong to the divine goodness that some creatures should have existed from eternity. Accordingly these are the arguments taken from God's side, which would seem to show that creatures have been always. Chapter 33. Arguments of those who would prove the eternity of the world from the point of view of creatures. There are also other arguments, taken from the point of view of creatures, that would seem to prove the same conclusion. For things which have no potentiality to non-being, cannot possibly not be. Now there are some creatures in which there is no potentiality to non-being, for there cannot be potentiality to non-being except in those things which have matter subject to contrariety, since potentiality to being and to non-being is a potentiality to privation and form, of which matter is the subject, and privation is always connected with the opposite form, since it is impossible for matter to be without any form at all. But there are certain creatures in which the matter is not subject to contrariety either because they are entirely devoid of matter, for instance intellectual substances, as we shall show further on, or because they have no contrary, as heavenly bodies, and this is proved by their movement, which has no contrary. Therefore it is impossible for certain creatures not to exist, and consequently, it is necessary that they exist always. Again, a thing's endurance in being is in proportion to its power of being, except accidentally, as in those which are corrupted by violence. But there are certain creatures in which there is a power of being not for any definite time, but forever, for instance the heavenly bodies and intellectual substances, because they are incorruptible through having no contrary. It follows, then, that it is competent to them to be always, but that which begins to exist, is not always. Therefore it is not becoming to them that they begin to exist. Further, whenever a thing begins to be moved anew, the mover, or the moved, or both, must be conditioned otherwise now while the movement is, than before when there was no movement, for there is a certain habitude or relation in the mover to the thing moved. For as much as it moves actually, and the new relation does not begin without a change either in both or at least in one or other of the extremes. Now that which is conditioned otherwise now and heretofore, is moved. Therefore, before the movement that begins anew, there must be a previous movement either in the movable or in the mover. It follows, in consequence, that every movement is either eternal, or has another movement preceding it. Therefore movement always has been, and consequently movable also. Therefore there have always been creatures, since God is utterly immovable, as we proved in the first book. Further, every agent that engenders its like, intends to preserve perpetual being in the species, for it cannot be preserved perpetually in the individual. But it is impossible for the desire of nature to be frustrated. Therefore it follows that the species of generable things are everlasting. Again, if time is everlasting, movement must be everlasting, since it is the reckoning of movement, and consequently movables must be everlasting, since movement is the act of a movable. Now time must needs be perpetual, for time is inconceivable without a now, even as a line is inconceivable without a point. But now is always the end of the past and the beginning of the future, for this is the definition of the now. Wherefore every given now has time preceding it and following it, and consequently no now can be either first or last. It follows therefore that movables, which are created substances, are from eternity. Again, one must either affirm or deny. If, therefore, by denying a thing we suppose its existence, that thing must needs be always. Now time is a thing of this kind, for if time was not always, we can conceive it as not being previously to being, and in like manner, if it will not be always, its non-being must follow its being. Now there can be no before and after in duration unless there be time, since the reckoning of before and after is time. Consequently time must have been before it began to be, and will be after it has ceased to be, and therefore time is eternal. But time is an accident, and an accident cannot be without a subject, and its subject is not God, who is above time, since he is utterly immovable, as we proved in the first book. It follows that some created substance is eternal. Moreover, many propositions are such that to deny them is to affirm them. For instance, whoso denies that truth exists, supposes the existence of truth, for he supposes that the denial which he utters is true. It is the same with one who denies this principle that contradictories are not simultaneous, since by denying this he asserts that the negative which he utters is true, and that the opposite affirmative is false, and thus that both are not true about the same thing. Accordingly if, as we have proved, a thing which through being denied has to be admitted, must be always, it follows that the aforesaid propositions, and all that result from them, are everlasting. But such propositions are not God. Therefore something beside God must be eternal. These, then, and similar arguments may be taken from the standpoint of creatures to prove that creatures have been always. Chapter 34. Arguments to prove the eternity of the world from the point of view of the making. Again, other arguments may be taken from the point of view of the making, in order to prove the same conclusion. For what is asserted by all in common cannot possibly be entirely false, because a false opinion is a weakness of the understanding, even as a false judgment about its proper sensible results from a weakness of the sense. Now defects are accidental, since they are beside the intention of nature. And what is accidental cannot be always and in everything. For instance, the judgment given by all tastes about savors cannot be false. Consequently, the judgment given by all about a truth cannot be erroneous. Now it is the common opinion of all philosophers that from nothing, naught is made. Wherefore this must be true. Hence if a thing is made, it must be made from something, and if this also is made, it must also be made from something. But this cannot go on indefinitely, for then no generation would be completed, since it is not possible to go through an infinite number of things. Therefore we must come to some first thing that was not made. Now everything that has not always been, must have been made. Therefore the thing from which all things were first made, must be eternal. But this is not God, since he cannot be the matter of a thing, as we proved in the first book. Therefore it follows that something beside God is eternal, namely primary matter. Moreover, if a thing is not in the same state now and before, it must be, in some way, changed, for to be moved is not to be in the same state now as before. Now everything that begins to be anew, is not in the same state now as before. Therefore this must result from some movement or change. But every movement or change is in a subject, for it is the act of a movable. Now, since movement precedes that which is made by movement, for movement terminates therein, it follows that before anything made there pre-exists a movable subject. And since this cannot go on indefinitely, we must necessarily come to some first subject that begins not anew but always has been. Again, whatever begins to be anew, it was possible, before it was, that it would be, for if not, it was impossible for it to be and necessary for it not to be, and so it would always have been a non-being and it never would have begun to be. Now that for which it is possible to be is a subject potentially a being. Therefore before everything that begins to be anew, there must pre-exist a subject which is a potential being. And since this cannot go on indefinitely, we must suppose some first subject which did not begin to be anew. Again, no permanent substance is while it is being made, for it is made in order that it may be, wherefore it would not have to be made if it were already. But while it is being made, there must be something that is the subject of the making, since a making, seeing that it is an accident, cannot be without a subject. Therefore whatever is made has a pre-existing subject. And since this cannot go on indefinitely, it follows that the first subject was not made, but is eternal. Whence it also follows that something beside God is eternal, because he cannot be the subject of making or movement. Accordingly these are the arguments, through clinging to which, as though they were demonstrations, some people say that things created have necessarily been always, wherein they contradict the Catholic faith, which affirms that nothing beside God has always been, and that all things have begun to be, save the one eternal God. Chapter 35. Solution of the foregoing arguments, and first of those that were taken from the standpoint of God. We must, accordingly, show that the foregoing reasons do not necessarily conclude, and first, those that are produced on the part of the agent, for it does not follow that God is moved either per se or accidentally if his effect begin to be anew, as the first argument pretended, because newness of effect may argue change of the agent in so far as it proves newness of action, since it is impossible for a new action to be in the agent, unless the latter be in some way moved, at least from inaction to action. But newness of effect does not prove newness of action in God, since his action is his essence, as we have proved above. Neither therefore can newness of effect argue change in God the agent. And yet it does not follow, if the action of the first agent is eternal, that his effect is eternal, as the second argument inferred. For it has been shown above, that in producing things God acts voluntarily. Not, however, As though they were an intermediate action of his, as in us the action of the motive power intervenes between the act of the will and the effect, as we have proved in a foregoing chapter, but his act of understanding and willing must be his act of making. Now the effect follows from the intellect and the will according to the determination of the intellect and the command of the will, and just as every other condition of the thing made is determined by the intellect, so is time appointed to it, for art determines not only that this thing is to be such and such, but that it is to be at this particular time, even as a physician determines that a draught is to be taken at such and such a time. Wherefore, if his willing were per se efficacious for producing the effect would follow anew from his former will, without any new action on his part. Therefore nothing prevents our saying that God's action was from eternity, whereas his effect was not from eternity, but then when from eternity he appointed. Hence it is also clear that, although God is the sufficient cause of bringing things into being, it is not necessary to suppose that because he is eternal his effect is eternal, as the third argument contended. For if we suppose a sufficient cause, we suppose its effect, but not an effect outside the cause, for this would be through insufficiency of the cause, as if for instance a hot thing failed to give heat. Now the proper effect of the will is for that thing to be which the will wills, and if something else were to be than what the will wills, this would be an effect that is not proper to the cause but foreign thereto. But just as the will, as we have said, wills this thing to be such and such, so does it will it to be at such and such a time. Wherefore, for the will to be a sufficient cause, it is not necessary for the effect to be when the will is, but when the will has appointed the effect to be. On the other hand, it is different with things which proceed from a cause acting naturally, because the action of nature is according as nature is. Wherefore the effect must necessarily follow if the cause exist, whereas the will acts, not according to the mode of its being, but according to the mode of its purpose. And consequently, just as the effect of a natural agent follows the being of the agent, so the effect of a voluntary agent follows the mode of his purpose. From the foregoing it is again clear that the effect of the divine will is not delayed, although it was not always, whereas it was always willed, as the fourth reason argued, because the object of the divine will is not only the existence of the effect, but also the time of its existence. Wherefore the thing willed, namely that a creature should exist at such and such a time, is not delayed because the creature began to exist at the time appointed by God from eternity. Nor can we conceive a diversity of parts of any duration before the beginning of the whole creature, as was supposed in the fifth argument, for nothingness has neither measure nor duration. And the duration of God, which is eternity, has no parts, but is utterly simple, having no before and after, since God is immovable, as stated in the first book. Wherefore there is no comparison between the beginning of the whole creature and any various signate parts of an already existing measure, to which parts the beginning of creatures can be related in a like or unlike manner, so that there need be a reason in the agent why he should have produced the creature at this particular point of that duration, and not at some particular or subsequent point. Such a reason would be necessary if there were some duration divisible into parts, beside the whole creature produced, as happens in particular agents, who produce their effect in time but do not produce time itself. But God brought into being both the creature and time together. Hence in this matter we have not to consider the reason why he produced them now and not before, but only why not always. This may be made clear by a comparison with place. For particular bodies are produced not only at a determined time, but also in a determined place, and since time and place by which they are contained are extraneous to them, there must needs be a reason why they are produced in this place and time rather than in another. Whereas in the whole heaven, outside which there is no place, and together with which the entire place of all things is produced, we have not to consider the reason why it is produced here and not there. And through thinking that this reason ought to be a matter of consideration, some have fallen into error, so as to place the infinite in bodies, in like manner, in the production of the entire creature, outside which there is no time, and together with which time is produced simultaneously. We have not to consider the reason why it was produced now and not before, so that we be led to grant the infinity of time, but only why it was not always produced, or why after non-being, or so as to imply a beginning. For the purpose of inquiring into this question, the sixth argument was adduced on the part of the end, which alone can bring about necessity in those things which are done voluntarily. Now the end of God's will can only be His goodness, and He does not act in order to bring this end into being, as a craftsman works in order to produce his handiwork, since His goodness is eternal and unchangeable, so that nothing can accrue thereto. Nor could it be said that God works for His betterment, nor again does He act in order to obtain this end for Himself, as a king fights in order to obtain possession of a city, for he is his own goodness. It remains therefore that he acts for an end, by producing an effect, so that it participate his end. Accordingly, in thus producing an effect on account of an end, the uniform relation of the end to the agent is not to be taken as a reason for his work being eternal, but rather we should consider the relation of the end to the effect which is made on account of the end, so that the effect be produced in such a way as to be most fittingly directed to the end. Consequently, from the fact that the end is uniformly related to the agent, we cannot conclude that the effect is eternal. Nor is it necessary that the divine effect should have been always, because thus it is more fittingly directed to the end, as the seventh argument seemed to infer, but it is more fittingly directed to the end by the fact that it was not always. For every agent that produces an effect in participation of his own form, intends to produce his likeness therein. Wherefore it was becoming to God's will to produce the creature in participation of his goodness, so that it might reflect the divine goodness by its likeness. But this reflection cannot be by way of equality, as a univocal effect reflects its cause, so that it be necessary for eternal effects to be produced by the divine goodness, but it is after the manner in which the transcendent is reflected by that which is transcended. Now the transcendence of the divine goodness over the creature is especially manifested by the fact that creatures have not been always, for thereby it is manifest that all else beside him has him as the author of its being, and that his power is not constrained to produce these effects, as nature is to natural effects, and consequently that he is a voluntary and intelligent agent, the opposite of which some have affirmed, through maintaining the eternity of creatures. Accordingly, on the part of the agent there is nothing to oblige us to hold the eternity of creatures,